I dig my fingernails into my palms as my face comes up, expecting the worst. Then they're flashing the number 11 on the screen. 11. Effie Trinket lets out a squeal, and everybody's slapping me on the back and cheering and congratulating me, but it doesn't seem real. There must be a mistake. How could that happen? I ask Haymitch.
Guess they liked your temper, he says. They've got a show to put on. They need some players with some heat.
Katniss, the girl who is on fire, says Cinna, and gives me a hug. Oh, wait until you see your interview dress. More flames, I ask.
Of a sort, he says mischievously.
Peeta and I congratulate each other, another awkward moment. We've both done well, but what does that mean for the other? I escape to my room as quickly as possible and burrow down under the covers. The stress of the day, particularly the crying, has worn me out. I drift off, reprieved, relieved, and with the number 11 still flashing behind my eyelids. At dawn, I lie in bed for a while, watching the sun come up on a beautiful morning. It's Sunday, a day off at home. I wonder if Gale is in the woods yet. Usually, we devote all of Sunday to stocking up for the week, rising early, hunting and gathering, then trading at the hob. I think of Gale without me. Both of us can hunt alone, but we're better as a pair, particularly if we're trying for bigger game. But also in the littler things, having a partner lighten the load could even make the arduous task of filling my family's table enjoyable. I'd been struggling along on my own for about 6 months when I first ran into Gale in the woods. It was a Sunday in October, the air cool and pungent with dying things. I'd spent the morning competing with the squirrels for nuts and the slightly warmer afternoon wading in shallow ponds harvesting Katniss. The only meat I'd shot was a squirrel that had practically run over my toes in its quest for acorns, but the animals would still be afoot when the snow buried my other food sources. Having strayed farther afield than usual, I was hurrying back home, lugging my burlap sacks, when I came across a dead rabbit. It was hanging by its neck in a thin wire a foot above my head. About 15 yards away was another. I recognized the twitch-up snares because my father had used them. When the prey is caught, it's yanked into the air out of the reach of other hungry animals. I've been trying to use snares all summer with no success, so I couldn't help dropping my sacks to examine this one. My fingers were just on the wire above one of the rabbits when a voice rang out.
That's dangerous.
I jumped back several feet as Gale materialized from behind a tree. He must have been watching me the whole time. He was only 14, but he cleared 6 feet and was as good as an adult to me. I'd seen him around the seam and at school. And one other time. He'd lost his father in the same blast that killed mine. In January, I'd stood by while he received his Medal of Valor in the Justice Building, another oldest child with no father. I remembered his two little brothers clutching his mother, a woman whose swollen belly announced she was just days away from giving birth.
"What's your name?"
he said, coming over and disengaging the rabbit from the snare. He had another 3 hanging from his belt. Katniss, I said, barely audible.
Well, Catnip, stealing's punishable by death, or hadn't you heard? He said.
Katniss, I said, louder. And I wasn't stealing it, I just wanted to look at your snare. Mine never catch anything. He scowled at me, not convinced.
So where'd you get the squirrel?
I shot it. I pulled my bow off my shoulder. I was still using the small version my father had made me, but I'd been practicing with the full-size one when I could. I was hoping that by spring I might be able to bring down some bigger game. Gale's eyes fastened on the bow.
Can I see that?
I handed it over. Just remember, stealing's punishable by death. That was the first time I ever saw him smile.
It transformed him from someone menacing to someone you wished you knew. But it took several months before I returned that smile. We talked hunting, then. I told him I might be able to get him a bow if he had something to trade. Not food. I wanted knowledge. I wanted to set my own snares that caught a belt of fat rabbits in one day. He agreed something might be worked out. As the seasons went by, we grudgingly began to share our knowledge, our weapons, our secret places that were thick with wild plums or turkeys. He taught me snares and fishing. I showed him what plants to eat and eventually gave him one of our precious bows. And then one day, without either of us saying it, we became a team, dividing the work and the spoils, making sure that both our families had food. Gale gave me a sense of security I'd lacked since my father's death. His companionship replaced the long, solitary hours in the woods. I became a much better hunter when I didn't have to look over my shoulder constantly, when someone was watching my back. But he turned into so much more than a hunting partner. He became my confidant, someone with whom I could share thoughts I could never voice inside the fence. In exchange, he trusted me with his. Being out in the woods with Gale, sometimes I was actually happy. I call him my friend, but in the last year it seemed too casual a word for what Gale is to me. A pang of longing shoots through my chest. If only he was with me now. But of course I don't want that. I don't want him in the arena where he'd be dead in a few days. I just miss him. And I hate being so alone. Does he miss me? He must. I think of the 11 flashing under my name last night. I know exactly what he'd say to me. Well, there's some room for improvement there. And then he'd give me a smile and I'd return it without hesitating now. I can't help comparing what I have with Gale to what I'm pretending to have with PETA. How I never question Gale's motives while I do nothing but doubt the latter's. It's not a fair comparison, really. Gale and I were thrown together by a mutual need to survive. PETA and I know the other survival means our own death. How do you sidestep that? Effie's knocking at the door, reminding me there's another big, big, big day ahead. Tomorrow night will be our televised interviews. I guess the whole team will have their hands full readying us for that. I get up and take a quick shower, being a bit more careful about the buttons I hit, and head down to the dining room. PETA, Effie, and Haymitch are huddled around the table talking in hushed voices. That seems odd, but hunger wins out over curiosity, and I load up my plate with breakfast before I join them. The stew's made with tender chunks of lamb and dried plums today. Perfect on the bed of wild rice. I've shoveled about halfway through the mound when I realize no one's talking. I take a big gulp of orange juice and wipe my mouth. So what's going on? You're coaching us on interviews today, right?
That's right, says Haymitch.
You don't have to wait until I'm done. I can listen and eat at the same time, I say.
Well, there's been a change of plans about our current approach, says Haymitch.
What's that? I ask. I'm not sure what our current approach is. Trying to appear mediocre in front of the other tributes is the last bit of strategy I remember. Haymitch shrugs.
PETA has asked to be coached separately.
Chapter 9. Betrayal. That's the first thing I feel, which is ludicrous. For there to be betrayal, there would have to have been trust first, between PETA and me. And trust has not been part of the agreement. We're tributes. But the boy who risked a beating to give me bread, the one who steadied me in the chariot, who covered for me with the red-headed Avox girl, who insisted Haymitch know my hunting skills, was there some part of me that couldn't help trusting him? On the other hand, I'm relieved that we can stop the pretense of being friends.
Obviously, whatever thin connection we'd foolishly formed has been severed. And high time, too. The games begin in 2 days, and trust will only be a weakness. Whatever triggered PETA's decision, and I suspect it had to do with my outperforming him in training, I should be nothing but grateful for it. Maybe he's finally accepted the fact that the sooner we openly acknowledge that we are enemies, the better.